Jewish philosophy and Jewish thought.
Started. Great.
I actually am very privileged to also have a chance to teach a Jewish philosophy or machshava in IBC. And I was trying to think, how am I going to do this differently than there? And my initial thoughts, though of course this is still an experiment, so I'd appreciate all of your feedback, is that I would like this to be more of a shiur, or even learning together, than a class. I teach in IBC, so I don't read anything inside generally, and we cover a lot of material. Here, I'd like to learn it together with you. We'll have Makoros each time. Each week, hopefully, we'll cover a different topic, or if not, every 2 weeks we'll cover a different topic. But we'll have a chance to learn it together, and hopefully, together, we'll learn how to read these types of sources. The types of sources that we're going to cover are going to be very varied. Today, we're going to deal with a topic which involves more philosophy. Other times, we'll deal with topics which are more associated with machshava, whether it be Maharal or Reb Tzadok. And you'll see here a list of topics that I'd like to cover. I'm hoping to get through these topics in the first semester, but I'm very interested in other topics. If you have requests, hopefully I'd be very interested in doing those. So let's begin. I thought that we would begin with the beginning, and we'd start with Rambam Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah Perek Aleph. The Rambam, of course, in Mishneh Torah is generally a work of halacha, but he begins with issues pertaining to what's generally known as Jewish philosophy. And he puts them in Mishneh Torah because he feels that these two are part of halacha. And if you take a look at Perek Aleph Halacha Aleph, you see very immediately a striking thing in the Rambam. The Rambam writes, Yesod ha-yesodos ve'amud ha-chachmos leida she'yesham matzoi. So the Yesod ha-yesodos, the Yesod upon which everything else rests, all of Mishneh Torah is built upon this Yesod, is that one must know that there is a matzoi rishon. The word leida, of course, is very important. Why? Because Rambam here doesn't write, it's a mitzvah lahamin. We're talking here about the mitzvah of emunah. Mitzvah of emunah is generally translated as faith. The term faith generally implies that a leap of faith must be taken. This isn't something that one could know. This is something that one must make some sort of leap. One must jump. And the Rambam starts off with the term leida, that belief in God is not just belief in the sense that you have to make a leap of faith, but this is something that one must know. It's yidia. He says the same thing in other sources. There is the old translations of the parish of the Sefer HaMitzvos say lahamin, though that's questionable. Some say that there too the correct translation should be leida. So the mitzvah of emunah is a mitzvah of yidia. One must know. How do you know? So if you look at the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam there offers a number of proofs, four different proofs for the existence of God. We'll see shortly that in the Mishneh Torah, he alludes to some of these proofs, two of them, though he doesn't expand upon that. And we'll get there shortly. Another issue that we'll have to grapple with, which we'll hopefully get to later today, is what is the nature of proofs? And are proofs still possible nowadays? Many of the proofs that the Rambam offers are somewhat antiquated. They're based on Aristotelian physics and philosophy. And, for example, if the proof is based on the movement of the spheres, and contemporary science doesn't assume that the spheres move in the same way as the Rambam presumed, so the question we have to ask is, are there proofs that are still relevant today? And what is the nature of emunah, as understood by the Rambam and perhaps other thinkers, nowadays. The Rambam continues. So in the first sentence he said that you have to have yediyah that there's a matsui rishon. Okay? Matsui rishon, matsui is an important word. And for now we'll just say that this is a first existence or first cause. V'hu mamtzi kol hanimtza. Notice how the Rambam does not use the term bria here. And that's going to be significant, as we'll explain shortly. The Rambam doesn't say God created everything that exists, but rather, v'hu mamtzi kol hanimtza. V'chol hanimtzaim mishamayim ve'aretz, u'ma shebeinehem, lo nimtzu ela mi'amitas himatz'o. And everything that exists from Shamayim v'aretz, in other words, absolutely everything, only exists because of the truth of his existence. So what does this mean, that everything only exists because of the truth of his existence? So the Rambam is going to explain shortly what this means. Very briefly, I'll state it outside, and then we'll see it inside. The Rambam here distinguishes between something which necessarily exists and something which does not necessarily exist, or perhaps accidentally exists. What does it mean when I say something necessarily exists? If something exists necessarily, it means it's impossible otherwise. This table happens to be made out of wood. Maybe, I'm not sure. Let's say it was made out of wood. So this wood could have been used...
Is this class being recorded?
Yes.
Oh, okay, so it could just be brought upstairs to Fagel Air once. Sorry. Okay.
This table happens to be made out of wood, but the wood could have been made into something else. This could have been made not into a desk, but into a chair or into a stender. So while it's true that... the desk is comprised of wood, that's not necessarily the case. It's accidental in the sense that it could have been otherwise. I exist, I'm alive, but it could be that I didn't exist. And it happens to be that I'm, I don't know, 5'8", but I could have been 5'6", or I could have been 6 feet. And I might, in the future, grow another couple inches, and I might shrink a couple of inches. All these things aren't necessary. And therefore, because the existence isn't necessary, then the truth of the existence isn't the same. In other words, the Rambam is going to explain shortly that the truth of God, the MS of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is not the same truth as the truth is about everything else. It is true that this table is made out of wood, but it's not a necessary truth, it's an accidental truth. Why? Because it could have been otherwise. Whereas when we say God exists, so that is a necessary truth. It couldn't have been otherwise, as he's going to explain shortly. Now, the Rambam also here alludes to an important point. He says, V'chol ha-nimtzaim mishamayim va'aretz, u'ma shebeinehem, lo nimtzu ela mi'amitas himatz'o. Everything which exists, exists because of his existence. In other words, he is the cause of all other existence. However, the Rambam here does not mean to imply a form of pantheism. We don't mean to say that everything that exists is part of God. The existence of other existences, let's say physical existences, exist separately from God. They're made out of a separate substance, but nevertheless, they depend upon his existence. And as such, we don't just exist because of Hashem. We don't just exist because Hashem created us, but rather we exist through Hashem. And as the Rav pointed out, an important corollary emerges from this. This implies a certain degree of connectedness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it's not just that we exist because of Hashem, but we exist through Hashem. And perhaps that is what allows for the ability to connect to Hashem. And this, too, is a point we're going to get back to shortly. So, halacha base.
V'im ya'alel hadas. What does that mean? That
we exist through Hashem?
We're going to get back to that. That's, for now, I'm just translating. V'chol hanimtzaim mishamayim v'aretz u'ma shebeinehem lo nimtzu ela me'amitas himatzo. Meaning to say, our existence is through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, at the very least, that means that we only exist because He wills us to exist. But we're going to, hopefully, today, get to a further corollary from that. Please don't hesitate to ask questions.
But from the first halacha, it doesn't sound like we exist because He wills us to exist, but just we're dependent on His existence.
Okay, that's also correct. And that's a correct correction. As I said before, the Rambam doesn't say here that God created all that exists, but they only exist because of His existence. And the question is, why doesn't He say it? And we'll get to that shortly. The Rambam explains why He doesn't say that. Okay. Halacha base. V'im ya'alel hadas shehu eino matzoi, ein davar acher yachol lehimatzos. If it were to be theoretically true that He doesn't exist, so then nothing else could exist. Now, when the Rambam here says that if you were to imagine, im ya'alel hadas, so He doesn't mean to say that one is actually imagining that. If you, in just a couple lines, we're going to read, and He's going to say the exact opposite. He's going to say, v'chol ma'alel dato she'yesham eloha acher chutz mizeh, over below sase, she'nemar lo ye'elech alohim acherim. If you were to think that there is some other God, or there isn't a God, then you're in violation of lo ye'elech. So what He says here means theoretically, and it's a type of proof of God, meaning to say, if I go ahead and imagine that God doesn't exist, then nothing else could exist. We know something else exists, so therefore we know God exists. It's similar to an ontological proof. But He doesn't mean that one actually imagines that. Okay, halacha gimel. And we're going to elaborate shortly. V'im ya'alel hadas ein kol hanimtzaim milvado metzuyim, hu levado yiyeh matzoi. So if one were to imagine that all other existences besides Him don't exist, He alone exists. V'lo yivatel hu levitulam. He would not be negated by their negation, meaning to say that if everything else ceased to exist, He would continue to exist. Shekol nimtzaim tzrichin lo, v'hu baruch hu eino tzarich lahem v'lo le'achad mehem. All other existence require Him, but He alone does not require any other existence. Lefikach ein amitaso kamitas echad mehem. Therefore, His truth is not like any other truth, and this is what we said before, because His existence and therefore His MS is necessary. It's a necessary truth, as opposed to all other things which are contingent. Hu shanavi omer v'Hashem Elokim MS. This is what the Navi says when he says Hashem Elokim MS. Hashem Elokim MS does not just mean God is true, in the sense that it's true that this table is made out of wood, but that His truth is like no other truth, that His truth is necessary. Hu levado emes, ve'ein la'acher emes ke'amitaso. He alone is truth, meaning absolutely true, or absolutely necessary, and nothing else is truth like His truthfulness. Ve'hu sha'Torah omeres, ein od milvado. That's what the Torah says when it means there's nothing else besides Him. Kolomar, ein sham matzui emes milvado kamoso. There, when we say there's nothing else besides Him, we don't mean to deny our own existence. We accept our own existence. What we mean to say is there's nothing that exists in a way similar to His existence, because His existence is necessary. His truth is absolute. And there is no other truth, there is no matsui emes, besides Him. So far, the Rambam has stated, or perhaps proven, the existence of God. That's halachos aleph through dalet. In halacha hey, he takes this one step further. And let's see halacha hey, and then I'm going to get to your question. Hamatsui hazeh hu elokei haolam, adon kol haaretz. So this existent, meaning God, so he's already shown us that God exists. What is the nature of his existence? So in Halacha Hey, he tells us the nature of his existence is that he's Elokei HaOlam. Elokei HaOlam, meaning to say he doesn't just exist in heavens, but he's Elokei HaOlam, of the world. He's God of the world. Elokim, as the Rambam explains in the guide, denotes power, control, and he is God of the world. So Halachos Aleph through Dalet have stated his existence and his necessary existence. Halacha He takes that a step further. He doesn't just exist, but he's God of the world. V'hu hamanhig hagalgal b'koach she'en lo keitz v'tachlis b'koach she'en lo hafseik shehagalgal sovev tamid v'iafshar she'asuv b'lo misovev v'hu baruchu hamisavev oso below yad uvelo guf. So it is God who governs this sphere with a power that is endless and infinite, with a power that does not cease, for the sphere revolves perpetually, and it is impossible to revolve without something to make it revolve. So this is what we explained, that God doesn't just exist, but the existence of our world depends upon his existence. What does he mean by the revolving of the spheres? So, we're not going to get into this too much, but in Aristotelian physics, there were a series of concentric spheres, and God causes the revolving of the outermost sphere, which allows for the revolving of the sphere within that, and the like. The details of that are not important for us at present. What's important is that the existence of our world and the movement within our world and that which you experience in our world is dependent upon him. He revolves the outer sphere. He revolves the outer sphere, meaning to say he's the cause of this movement, but he does so infinitely, and moreover, he does so without actually any physical existence. So it's not, the Rambam saying, as though there's a hand that's turning around the outermost sphere, like if you were to spin a globe around, you would spin it with your hand. No, he causes the revolving without actually physically existing. And in the Moreh, he explains exactly how it's possible for a non-physical entity to cause the movement of the physical spheres. That being the case, the Rambam here is telling us an important point. First of all, the Rambam here is referring to a proof of God. And he's stating here, and he explains it more in depth in the guide, but he's stating here that we know that God exists because we know of the movement of the spheres, and the movement of the spheres necessarily implies that there's a prime mover, and therefore, if we exist and there's movement, then there must be a God. It's a cosmological proof of God. Almost all the Rambam's proofs are cosmological. And therefore, the Rambam is stating here that we know of the existence of God because of the movement of the spheres. Now, let me explain a couple of things to elaborate upon this point. First of all, the Rambam, even though, as I said in the guide, offers a number of proofs to God, to the existence of God, this is the one that he always invokes in Mishneh Torah. And he actually invokes it three different places in Mishneh Torah. He invokes it over here. He invokes it at the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, where the Rambam explains how is it that Avram Avinu came to the recognition of God. And the Rambam basically explains that he began to search, to grapple. V'yada, this is Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Aleph Halacha Gimel, V'yada she'yesh sham Eloah Ached, v'hu manhig agalgal, v'hu bara hakol, Vein kol animtza Eloha chutz mimenu. So basically, by examining the world, the universe, understanding the movement of the spheres, Avram Avinu independently proved the existence of God. This is very similar to a number of the Midrashim that also understand that Avram Avinu looked at the universe and came to an appreciation of the existence of God. Eifshar labira b'lo manhig. The Rambam also later on in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah is going to invoke this proof once again. And we'll get there shortly. Now, the proof is fully developed in the second part of Mor Nevuchim. Mor Nevuchim is comprised of three different books. And there he lays out this proof fully It's actually a proof that is 26 different steps. So it's quite a long and elaborate, complex proof. But in 26 proofs, he goes ahead and proves the existence of God through the movement of the spheres. Now, the Rambam says a very important point about the nature of this proof in Mor Nevuchim. He says, 25 of the propositions which are employed in the proof of the existence of God, or in the arguments demonstrating that God is neither corporeal nor a force connected with any material being, or that he is one, have been fully established. So, the 25 of the propositions in the proof have been fully proven. And their correctness is beyond doubt. Aristotle's and Peripatetics, who followed him, have proved each of these propositions. There is, however, one proposition which we do not accept, namely, the proposition which affirms the eternity of the universe. But we will admit it for present, because by doing so, we shall be enabled to clearly demonstrate our own theory. So this actually brings us to the point that you raised before, that the Rambam here does not say God created the entire universe. The Rambam states here the following, that this proof is based on an assumption that I don't think is correct. Now, if you see that at first glance, you would think that's a pretty silly thing. Why would you make a proof based on an assumption that you don't accept, or an assumption that you can prove? If you can't prove one of the assumptions in a proof, so then the proof is essentially worthless. So what is the Rambam telling us here? And I think this is something that's misunderstood. I once saw an essay where the author said that Rambam's proof of God is based on some type of suffix, which of course it's not at all. The Rambam thinks that God's existence can be definitively proven. What he means is the following. He's saying the following. The Rambam says, I actually believe in the creation of the universe. The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim offers several models to explain the existence of the universe. He offers what he calls Moshe, Plato, Aristotle. And the Rambam says, he says the following. He says, the simple reading of the Torah, though not necessarily the conclusive reading of the Torah, we'll get there shortly, the simple reading of the Torah is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the universe. Yesh me'ayin. However, that's not something that I could prove. I could prove the existence of God, I could prove his oneness, I could prove his incorporeality, but I can't prove that the world was created yesh me'ayin. And therefore, I am going to prove the existence of God assuming the eternality of the universe. Now, does that in any way limit the proof? No, of course not. Because if we have two options, either the universe is eternal or is created by God. If it was created by God, then obviously God exists. If it was eternal, the Rambam is saying, I could also prove God exists. So one way or the other, I'm able to prove God exists. Whether you assume that the universe is eternal, I could prove God's existence through the movement of the spheres, because there must be some prime mover. So even if God didn't create the spheres, but he exists and is responsible for their movement, or if you assume that God created the universe, then obviously by definition he exists. So there's no doubt about the existence of God. Now, with respect to the creation of the universe, the Rambam says that he thinks that the most compelling position is that God did create the universe, that it was created yesh me'ayin, bria yesh me'ayin. However, that's something that cannot be proven definitively, meaning to say, it's compelling. We know of a lot of things, not because they could necessarily be proven definitively through syllogistic logic, but because it makes sense that they're true, and it makes sense that God created the universe, and therefore the Rambam believes it's correct. However, the Rambam says that's not something I could prove, and therefore, since I want my proof for God to be ironclad, I'm going to prove God based on the existence, based on the assumption that even if you assume, though I don't think that's correct, that the universe is eternal. Now, that is why the Rambam here doesn't say that God created the universe, but he's mamtzi kol hanimtza, v'chol hanimtza lo nimtzu ela miyamitas himatzo. Now,
what's the difference?
There's a big difference. Was Bria Yesh Me'ayin, was there nothing, and then God created everything? Or perhaps, as Aristotle assumed, matter was eternal. Now there's an obvious question, which is, how could the Rambam even consider the possibility that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't create the world? Isn't Mefurish in the Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did create the world? So to this the Rambam says that the truth is that the simple reading of Parshas Bereishis certainly does imply that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. But, the Rambam says, if the eternity of the universe could be proven philosophically, meaning to say that philosophically it could be proven definitively that matter was eternal, as Aristotle presumed, so then I would be able to still read Bereishis Perek Aleph. Bereishis Perek Aleph is not definitive with respect to Bria Yesh Me'ayin. It doesn't say anywhere that there was explicitly, at least, that there is Bria Yesh Me'ayin.
Especially according to Rashi.
Exactly. If you read the first pasuk according to Rashi, Bereishis Bara Elokim Es Hashamayim Ves Haaretz, to mean B'tchias Bria Shamayim Ve'aretz Amar Elokim Yehi Or, and Rashi proves that not for philosophical reasons, but textual reasons, because it says Bereishis as opposed to Bereishonah, and because the order is skewed if you assume that it means that God first created heavens and earth. That would be impossible. That happened later on, and therefore he translates that as Betchila. Though I don't know if that's what the Rambam had in mind, but the point is that if you were to read, like you point out, the first pasuk according to Rashi, it doesn't definitively state that all existence exists Briyam Yesh Me'ayin. So that's why the Rambam says, I'm going to offer a proof, and this is the proof that he alludes to over here. And how do I know that that's the proof that he's alluding to over here? So he actually says so explicitly in Mar Nevuchim. He says that, if you look in your footnotes, I'm skipping a little to the paragraph, for this reason you will find in my works on the Talmud, when he refers to his works on the Talmud, he's probably referring to our halacha. As I said, this proof of God based on the prime mover, the movement of the spheres, is one that he mentions three times in the Yad HaChazaka. For this reason, you will find in my works on the Talmud, whenever I speak of the fundamental principles of our religion, or to prove the existence of God, that I employ arguments which imply the eternity of the universe. How does our halacha imply the eternity of the universe? Because it says, Gal Gal Sovev Tamid. I do not believe in that eternity, the Rambam says, but I wish to establish the principle of the existence of God by an indisputable proof, and should not like to see this most important principle founded on a basis which everyone could shake or attempt to demolish. So that's what the Rambam's doing over here. I'm reading the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim in English, just because since the Hebrew is a translation anyway, it's English is a little easier for us. May as well read it in English. When we do the Mishneh Torah, we'll do it, obviously, in the original. Yes?
Maybe two gods created the universe.
Ah, so he has a separate proof for one God. That's part of the 25... That's part of the 25 assumptions that he proves definitively.
One of the assumptions is the one God.
No, one of the proofs. He proves all 25 of the assumptions can be proven definitively, including one God and the incorporeality of God and the like. The only thing that he can't prove definitively is Bria Yesh Me'ayin. So if you go through those 25 proofs, 25 assumptions, we're not going to do that in class, but it's important to know that what he's stating over here is really a reference to what he expands upon in the Mora. Yeah?
How do you reconcile, according to Rambam, God's necessity of existence and the eternity of the universe?
Okay.
The eternity of the universe is not bound by...
No. Time. Necessary existence just means that it couldn't be otherwise. Eternity of the universe, if you assume matter is eternal, so then matter always existed. Matter, even if it always existed, may or may not be necessarily existent. And the Rambam says that it doesn't necessarily exist, meaning to say, even if it's always existed, it could be destroyed. So it's not necessarily existent, as opposed to his existence, which is both eternal and necessary.
But if it says it always existed, does it mean it doesn't imply a beginning?
No. Always existing doesn't imply a beginning. Always existing implies that there is no beginning.
How does he prove that God is necessary and true?
That's part of the proof.
That's part of the 24 steps?
Yes. I mean, that's that is the proof, that he necessarily exists, correct.
No, but how...
That is part of the proof, yeah.
We're not doing the proof now.
We're not going to do the proof. The proof is, if we had a class in Varnavuchim, we could go through the proof. Even then, I don't know if I could explain the proofs. But for now, we're just going to do... hopefully, we'll get through Perak Aleph of Hilchos Yisod HaTorah. We're just going to do Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, and I mention it because the Rambam here is referring to it, but we're not going to do it. One of the reasons we're not going to do it is because, as I mentioned before, it's based on certain assumptions which don't conform with modern physics, like the movement of the spheres. Yeah, so, Nathan.
If the Rambam is trying to convince someone who thinks that the world was not created each time, so I can see the value of the proof, but otherwise, what's the utility of the proof that's based on an assumption that...
Well, if the Rambam's trying to prove the existence of God, so he's going to say, look, you either accept one of two things. Either you say Yesh Me'ayin, you assume Yesh Me'ayin, or you assume not Yesh Me'ayin. Either way, I could prove to you the existence of God. That's important when trying to prove the existence of God. When you have the question of Bria Yesh Me'ayin, so then we have to take a different approach, which is that instead of looking for philosophical proof, since there is none, at least none that are definitive, then we have to start thinking about a different line of thinking, which is what is most mistaber. Okay, so that's halacha aleph through dalet. Aleph through dalet again. Aleph through hay. Aleph through dalet, he's proven God's existence, and in hay, he's shown that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't just exist but relates to our world. Yes. Yeah.
And so could you just summarize what exactly does he insist on us Leida?
So far, he said, Leida Shiye Sham Matsui Rishon. That's the...
Anything else is just help in order to Leida that.
Yeah. Okay. So now he's actually going to make this a little clearer. Okay. So, Yediyas Davar Zeh, Halacha Vav, Yediyas Davar Zeh, Mitzvas Asei. So Yediya, once again, the word Leida. So knowing this is a mitzvah saseh, shenemar anochi Hashem Elokecha. This is, of course, the Rambam's position, as he explains in Sefer HaMitzvos, that emuna is a mitzvah saseh. It's derived from anochi Hashem Elokecha. Later on, I was hoping today, but maybe next class, we will have to talk about the position of the Ramban and the position that emuna is not included in one of the Taryag mitzvos, and the objections to this. However, the Rambam, of course, believes that Yediyas Davar Zeh is a mitzvah saseh, and that's based on the pasuk of Anochi. V'chol ha'ma'ala al dato she'ein sham Eloha acher chutz mimenu, chutz mizeh, excuse me, over belo saseh, she'nemar lo yeh lecha Elohim achirim al panai, v'kofer be'ikar she'zehu ha'ikar hagadol she'akol talui bo. So halacha aleph through dalet is Hashem's existence, hey is his relationship to the universe, and vav is the contextualization with respect to the mitzvah. It's both a mitzvah saseh to know this, and it's a lo saseh if this is denied. Okay, now let's continue. Halacha zayin. Eloha zeh echad hu. Ve'eno shnayim, ve'lo yaser ach shnayim, ela echad. She'en ki yichudo echad min ha'achadim hanimtzaim ba'olam. Lo echad kemin shu kolel achadim harbei, v'lo echad kiguf shu nechlak l'machlakos uliktzavos. So clearly the notion that God is one is obvious. One in the sense that there are no other gods. This is simple. The Rambam here is saying it's not just Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad doesn't just mean that he is one in the sense that there are no other gods, but it also means that he's one in the sense that he is simple. or that he's not comprised of multiple parts. So it's not just that God is one and there's not two gods, but rather it's God is one in the sense that he's simple. And that's very important, meaning to say, as opposed to all other things in existence, where though they are one, they are divisible. There is one pencil in my hand, but I could break it in half. Then it would be comprised of two parts. I could break it into further divisions, into molecules and the like. The molecules could be further divided. So this, it is true that this pencil is one, but the oneness of this pencil is different than the oneness of God. Now, this is something that we should really explain a little bit. First of all, here the Rambam excludes two possibilities. He says, Lo echad kemin shehu kolel achadim harbei. So his oneness is not like that of a single type consisting of many individuals. And also, the lo echad keguf shehu nechlak lemechlakos uliktzavos. Not like the oneness of a body which incorporates many parts. Meaning to say that as a body, I comprise many parts. The Rambam elaborates upon this in several places, including in the Hakdama to Perush HaMishnayos, when he goes through the Yud Gimel Ikarim, and in the Mor Nevuchim. In the Mor Nevuchim, section 1, chapter 51, he writes, there is no oneness at all except in believing that there is one simple essence in which there is no complexity or multiplicity of notions. Now, let me explain this a little bit. And the Rambam is actually going to allude to this in the Mishneh Torah shortly, but let me try to elaborate. Human beings, though, again, I am one, but I'm divisible in many ways. In what way am I divisible? So, for example, I'm divisible in the physical sense, like we said before. I could be cut up into parts. I'm also divisible in the sense that I'm comprised of different things. Some of these things are non-essential characteristics. So I might get angry, but my anger isn't part of me. It could, and that's why, for example, I could change. I could have certain traits which could change. For example, I could be strong, but again, that's not an essential characteristic, because I could grow weak. Somebody might be very strong and then they'll get sick and then they'll become weak, or they'll age and they'll become weak. So strength is not an essential characteristic. Moreover, I can express different emotions and I could act differently in different times. Now, some people are more bifurcated than others. Let's just give an example. Let's say you had a teacher, and this was a very good teacher. So the teacher might be very kind and forgiving to one student, and the teacher might be very strict to another student, and the teacher might sometimes see students acting up and turn a blind eye, and then the teacher might sometimes see students acting up and will pounce upon them and punish them. Now, that might be a reflection of the teacher being fickle, or perhaps there's one unifying motivation of the teacher which expresses itself in many different ways. For example, if it's a good teacher, the unifying motivation of that teacher is that the teacher is always trying to help the students grow in knowledge and in their moral development. And that motivation will sometimes express itself in being kind and sometimes express itself in being strict, depending upon the circumstances. So in that case, there's unity, even though that unity sometimes expresses itself in different manifestations. So the same is true, halachas kama v'kama, with respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is total and absolute unity in a sense that even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu may express himself differently at different times and in different under different circumstances, that those expressions are reflections of a single, absolute, unchanging unity. Now, this notion of the absolute unity and simplicity of God is something that has many implications. One of them, as the Rambam will express shortly, is that it is actually impossible to have any type of attribution, positive attribution to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or positive traits. It's not absolutely honest to say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Rachum or a Chanun. If that's true, we'll have to ask, why then does the Torah do so? Why? Because for a number of reasons. First of all, having a trait exists implies that there's something that exists within him that's not part of his essence. Moreover, it implies multiplicity within HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has different characteristic traits. And therefore, the Rambam shows that the truth is we could only describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu with negative characteristics. So I can't say that he is wise, though I can say that he's not unwise. Now, it's important to remember that this is a double negative in the sense, not in the sense that it's commonly employed, as the Rambam explains. Generally, when I say a double negative, that's not necessarily the biggest compliment. Somebody asks me information about a certain boy for a shidduch, and they say, is he smart? And I say, well, he's not smart. So that's not the it's not the biggest compliment to say somebody isn't dumb. But with respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the truth is that there is no other option. Now, and likewise, when we refer to his activities, we don't refer to his essence, but rather we refer to the way in which he relates to the universe. So, if the Torah describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for example, as jealous, it doesn't mean to say that God is jealous. It means to say that he related to the world in such a way that would be interpreted as jealousy if done by a human being. Now, that's a rather clumsy way of talking, because it's not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is jealous. And moreover, his attributes don't in any way resemble our attributes. In other words, even if we were to describe God as wise, his wisdom is in no way similar to our wisdom. It happens to be that we use the same word in describing both, but there's no overlap. So what we say when we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu acted mercifully, we mean to say that the way in which he related to the world is such that if a human being were to have done that, it would have been interpreted as an action which is merciful. Now, this gets to a very basic issue. And the truth is, a lot of the ideas that we've said till now, including the oneness of God, the simplicity of God, this notion that we can't understand God's essence and we could only relate to the manner in which he relates to the world and relates to us, are all things which almost all Jewish thinkers accept. There might be some degree of debate, but for the most part are accepted, though oftentimes are expressed very differently. You could see, for example, all of the ideas, all of those basic ideas in the Ramchal, who's coming from a more Kabbalistic perspective. But the ideas, the basic ideas, are very the same, very similar. The Ramchal would say it differently. He would say that we can't relate to the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which he describes as the Ein Sof. We only relate into the way in which he, the way in which he relates to the world. You might express that by describing the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the difference between his essence and his name, right? For example, we say Bayoma Uya Hashem Achad Ushmo Achad. What's Hashem and Shmo? We refer to his essence, and Shmo is the way in which he relates to the universe. We might talk about the difference between Kud Shebrichu Ushchinte, again, the essence of God, versus the way in which he manifests himself and the way in which we could relate to him. And there's a lot here, and hopefully over the course of the year we're going to get back to a number of these points.
So I understand that the point of this, like the Rambam's description, also the Ramchal, is to show like the difference between God and let's say humans. But I'm like, so you see me now, but you don't know my essence.
Right.
You only know the way I interact with you. So it seems to me not to really show the difference between God and...
But your essence is at least theoretically knowable to me. I happen not to know it.
How is that true?
But there's no it might be that I'm just not smart enough to know your essence, or I haven't spent enough time studying your essence to understand your essence. But given much, much more wisdom. Now, maybe it's not true. But
I'm not sure it's ever possible to know anything more than the way I relate to you.
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe if I took you apart and I put you back together and understood, you know, was able to, as it were, examine your soul in a microscope, obviously not a physical microscope, maybe there is something that
I find that I maybe do that to God.
So that's what the Rambam is saying. In other words, one is impossible, and one is at least theoretically possible, if not practically possible. Now, let's just finish this halacha on the Achdus of Hashem, and then I just want to let's finish this halacha. Ella yichud she'en yichud kamoso ba'olam ilu hayu elohus harbei hayu gufin ugvios. So the Rambam here explains that part of God's oneness is his incorporeality. In other words, if God had a body, there would be a limit to his power. Conversely, everything that has some sort of physical component is by definition limited. Mipnei she'en hanimnim hashavim b'mitziusam nifradim zem mizeh ela b'me'orin she'yir'u b'gufos v'hagvios. So this is an important point. What causes two things to be different from each other, separate from each other, exist separately? So the reason why these two svarim are two things and not one thing is because they have physical properties, they physically exist, and therefore they're physically separate and independent from each other. If there was no physical component to them, then there'd be no way to distinguish them from each other. In what way are they not one? In what way are they two? This actually raises a very interesting question, which the Rambam deals with in the second chapter of Mar Nevuchim, which is the Rambam seems to say that angels, that malachim, have no physical body, and at the same time, they are distinct. He talks about the various different levels of angels, and different angels exist. How could malachim be separate if they have no physical existence? And the Rambam suggests that they're separate because they have different levels. And this is actually one of the issues that the Ramban, both in his Perush al HaTorah as well as in Char Gemul, takes issue with the Rambam in terms of whether it's possible or not possible for angels to actually take on a physical form. According to the Rambam, that's impossible, and according to the Ramban, it may be possible. But that's in the second parak. I don't think we're going to have a chance to get to the Rambam's discussion of Halachim. Anyway, with respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's saying that because he has no physical existence, right? He's incorporeal, so that relates to his oneness. Because if he, once he has no physical existence, then there could be no way of distinguishing. Okay. V'ilu haya hayotzer, interesting here, he refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the Yotzer, Guf Ugvia. The reason why it's not problematic that he refers to him as Yotzer, and in fact he does refer to him several places in Mor Nevuch, in Mishneh Torah's Bore, is because he thinks that's actually true. It's only in the earlier part that he had to be specific. Avilu haya hayotzer guf ugvia haya lokates v'tachlis she'iaf shar liyos guf she'en lokates. Were he to have some type of physical body, then he would be finite. He would be limited. Because anything that has physical existence must have an end. So if God did have any form of physical existence, then he wouldn't be infinite. There would be an end to his existence. V'chol she'yesh l'gufo keitz v'tachlis yesh l'kocho keitz v'gufo v'sof. Sorry, keitz v'sof. Moreover, if he had some type of physical end, there would be a limit to his power. V'Eloheinu baruch shemo ho'il v'kocho ein lo keitz v'eino posek. Again, referring back to the eternity of the spheres. I mean, sorry, the revolving of the spheres. In kocho koach guf. V'ho v'eno guf, lo yir'u lo me'uraos hagufos, k'deish yu nechlak v'nifrad me'acher. Lefikach, yefshar shiyet el echad, v'diyas davar zeh, mitzvah saseh, shenemar, shemash, Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem echad. So, the Rambam here has now gone through, this is the third mitzvah. He's talked about Anokhi Hashem Elokecha, that's Yediyas Hashem, Yediyas Leida Sheyesh Matzoi Rishon. There is Lo Yia, which is not denying that, and now there is Achdus Hashem, which is derived from the Pasuk of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Halacha Ches. Hare mefurish b'toru v'nviyim she'en HaKadosh Baruch Hu guf u'gviya she'nemar ki Hashem Elokeichem hu Elokim b'shamay mima'al v'al ha'aretz mitachas v'aguf lo yeh b'shnei mekomos. Further proof from the psukim that God does not have a physical body. V'nemar ki lo re'isem kol t'muna. The Torah in Sefer Dvarim especially stresses again and again, you didn't see anything because there is nothing that could even theoretically be seen. V'ne'emar ve'almit damyuni ve'ashaveh. God says, with whom can you compare me and I will be comparable? V'ilu hayaguf hayadom elishar gufim. So the Rambam basically goes ahead and says here that there are a number of psukim which clearly show and take for granted that God doesn't have any physical body. And this, of course, is an important thing to prove, not just philosophically, but from Sukkim, because, as the Ravid points out, there were many, perhaps even very great thinkers, who seem to have assumed that that God might have had some type of physical existence. Yes?
Why is it possible, why do you say that because you have a physical body, therefore you can't be at two places at the same time? The more it could be, I mean, I don't know if this is approaching pantheism, would say that there's multiple physical manifestations. Mm-hmm.
So you're saying,
yeah, it didn't mean that he didn't exist in the rest of the world. It just meant that what they saw, what B'nai Yisrael saw at that time, was that.
So let's take that one step at a time. So I didn't understand your example when you said,
I mean,
what,
let's say for example, the pasuk it says
tachas livnasas, yeah,
right. So that was as a good example. So what they saw was what they saw. It didn't mean that God wasn't in every place at the same time.
So the Rambam is going to say shortly that, of course, that they didn't see anything there. That is a mashal umalitza. And, however, the Rambam assumes that, now could you perhaps offer an alternative? I'm not sure. But the Rambam assumes that if I have a physical body, then my physical body might be very big or very small, but the same physical thing can't exist in two different places at the same time. Then there would be two. So you're stuck, because either you don't want to say there's two, and if you say that there's one, then that same single physical being can't exist at two different places at the same time. Now, what you're alluding to is the following, and that's an important question, which is, maybe I'll be able to say that God doesn't physically exist in the sense that we physically exist or this chair physically exists, but perhaps the possibility exists for God to take on some type of physical manifestation. The Rambam thinks that's impossible. In other words, it's absolutely categorically impossible for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take on any physical manifestation because of all the things he said. Then that would imply a limitation. Now, a question I guess that we're not going to discuss now since we're out of time, but we'll have to turn to another time, is, if I say something is impossible with respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, does that in any way limit him, or is that a contradiction to his all the fact that he's all-powerful, he's Kol Yachol? If I say that God can't do something, does that contradict his omnipotence? So the answer is it doesn't, and as we'll have to explain another time, the notion of Kol Yachol, of omnipotence, means that he could do anything that's theoretically possible. The fact that I say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't divide himself, or HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't destroy himself, does not in any way contradict his omnipotence, because it's necessarily impossible. Like we said, his existence is necessary, so therefore he couldn't destroy himself because it's definitionally impossible. He couldn't duplicate himself because that's definitionally impossible. And likewise, if you assume it's definitionally impossible for God to have any form of physical form, then the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't actually take on such a physical form or manifestation doesn't in any way imply any type of deficiency or limitation of his power, simply because it's impossible by definition. When we say that God, there's nothing God can't do, it means there's nothing God that God can't do that in any way would imply deficiency, or there's nothing theoretically possible which God is incapable of doing. Okay, we're going to stop here. We didn't get as much done as I'd hoped, but we'll, I guess, continue with this topic next week. Be'ezras Hashem. Thank you very much for coming. Once again, please don't hesitate to speak to me outside of Shir to come get to know me. Also, next, you shouldn't think again. So for those of you who aren't so excited about philosophy and the like, many of the topics that we're going to do over the course of the year won't be similar to this type of more philosophical, speculative type that we did today. We started with the Yesoda Yesodos for the Rambam, but we're really going to hopefully, Be'ezras Hashem, over the course of the year, see a wide range of thinkers and a wide range of topics. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes?
Remind me your name.